Yeah, no one's ever asked about the band name.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin!
You are listening to episode 137 of Sapnin Podcast with myself, Sean Smith, and my good friend, Morgan Richards.
Yes, it's me, Morgan Richards, and I'm pretty excited for the amount of big, wiggly-style sassafras throughout this episode.
That is the weirdest one. I'll give that. As puns go, that is the best use of the strange words that he uses in lyrics and song titles. Yes, this week's guest is Mike Karanica of The Devil Wears Prada.
Yes, now Mike Karanica has always been an interesting figure to me. Not only his work as a musician, but an author, hockey clothing enthusiast, and just what he offers artistically to metalcore and beyond. The Devil Wears Prada are one of those bands who mean a lot to my generation of heavy music lovers. It hasn't just always been about funny song titles and breakdowns. I do truly believe they've always tried to offer something different, and 2019's album The Act definitely opened a lot of new doors for them. But this conversation is going to get deep and touch on so many of the band's and Mike's different aspects, sides, and greater mentality, all while we celebrate the release of their new Z2 EP, which is a direct concept follow-up to their iconic cult classic Zombie EP released 11 years ago. The tracks sound absolutely huge, and I'm sure you can agree, Sean, that it takes a lot of bollocks to do something like that.
Wow, I can't believe you used the word bollocks. Yes. We get into it with Mike about Z2, or Z2, as it's known in the UK. Because it truly, that's how we say it. So it's Z2. I know they're going to say Z, and it's his record, but it's Z. Like everybody's favourite New York-based rapper, Jay-Z, that's how we say it over here. But yeah, we get into it with Mike, and it was a really, really good chat that we had to talk all things The Devil Wears Prada, book writing, and yeah, as you said, clothing as well. Yeah, it was just a super, super interesting chat. And yeah, I'm glad we got to do it.
Yeah, I'm very proud of this one. I think there's a lot of different sides to Mike you're going to hear throughout the episode. And as Sean said, we're just going to talk about everything from their back catalogue and the legacy of that original Zombie EP to Mike's other artistic outlets, how Adam D from Killswitch Engage changed their lives forever. Books, poetry, dogs, ice hockey, traveling, we cover it all. And I even get a little cheeky and dig some dirt about a certain surprise he might be working on. So there's a lot to sink into.
Yes, there is. Yes. Thank you very much to Mike. Thank you very much to The Devil Wears Prada. Thank you very much to their team for sorting this. Yeah, we had a lovely time. If you've got any ideas for future guests or questions you have, please get in touch with us at Sapnin Pod on Twitter and Instagram. That's at SAPPENINPOD, SAPPENINPOD. And yeah, give us a follow, give us a like. Please, please, please give us a share, because it all helps. And you don't realise how much one retweet into your timeline might get somebody who's never checked us out before a chance to listen to us, and then hopefully they will like it. So yeah, check us out at Sappening Pod on Instagram and Twitter. And also, if you've listened to four or more episodes of Sappening Podcast, you owe it to yourselves and us to join patreon.com/sappening, where we've made a whole community of absolutely beautiful people who are absolutely amazing. And yeah, we've got some things on our Patreon to check out, some behind the scenes interviews, some interviews from the download pilot that we did, some videos, some photos. Yeah, check it out, patreon.com/sappening.
Yes, there's loads of extra bonus content over there, and the community of people that get involved with it are absolutely fantastic. You meet some new best friends, and they open up about whole different things each and every day in the chat. So if you need to make new friends, if you need to talk to someone, head over to patreon.com/sappening and help us continue to create this absolute madness of a podcast. But without any further ado, let's just get straight into this wonderful conversation with Mike Aranica of The Devil Wears Prada. It's gonna get heavy. It's gonna make you laugh. Let's have a good time.
Woohoo!
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Sapnin!
Sapnin!
Sapnin, fellas. Thanks for having me. Shoot, gosh.
Yes! No, thank you very much for giving us your time. Yeah, this week's guest is the fantastic Mike Horanica from the wonderful and heavier than ever The Devil Wears Prada.
Yes!
How are you?
I'm good. Just real swamped. Just did a stream set, playing through Z2, our new EP and whatnot. So, but I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Yeah. Give exactly the same answer then, Mark. I don't want to talk about our feelings.
Yeah, that's something. But all the better for you joining us. So thank you, Mike, for taking the time. I know you said you're swamped, and I can only imagine the level of really stress and how busy you are behind the scenes, because not only do you have this new EP now, but you always have 101 projects going on behind the scenes as well. So I'm sure it's just busier than ever for you.
Yeah. If I ever get in the slightest bit bored, I get very anxious. So I'd rather be very stressed instead doing too many things all the time. It turns out that when there's the reality of a pandemic, I have no idea how to weigh my time and activities. So, the band has joked as far as, so it feels like it's this pandemic has been 10 years. And then sometimes you're like, holy smokes, I feel like January was yesterday. So, just like everyone else, just navigating this situation.
Yeah, don't blame you. But how have you been over this kind of last 18 months with everything? I know you've got all these projects to keep you busy and the father to two dogs as well that seem to get a lot of love on Instagram. But what else has been occupying your time? How have you been behind the scenes?
You know, I thought you almost said father of two children. I'm like, I don't know where your source is.
Yeah, you could have gone, but wait, beforehand, you said you weren't going to do that.
No, I don't have any children. I thought you were going to tell me I do, and that's scary.
What? That's a different podcast altogether.
Yeah, somewhere else, some other place. Like I said, being busy is good for me for the most part, trying to maintain any kind of balance of control. But the dogs are doing well. They're sleeping on the bed upstairs. And I've had some days are much better than others in terms of the span of the pandemic. But I'm grateful to have received both my vaccinations last month and just trying to keep healthy, trying to, you know, this is the longest I've ever gone as far as not being on the road since my accidental career began. So actually taking the very intentional time to work on mental health and figure some things out that I've never slowed down enough for in terms of being a teenager playing in a band half my lifetime ago. So yeah, just trying to make the most of it. I would never really consider myself an overly optimistic person, but trying to actually consciously choose happiness on a day-to-day level rather than just being the old cranky curmudgeon that I often tend to be. So
what? You can do that? I'm going to change my whole fucking life. No, this is going to be something absolute. Yeah. You mentioned doing stuff to strengthen your mental health. Is there anything in particular you do? Is there any like meditation? Is there breathing exercises? Is there anything you...
You know, I think it's a lot just being present on a daily basis rather than saying like, oh, you know, like let's say we're recording this a few weeks ago and saying like, oh, I'm recording a stream for Z2 with the boys in a few weeks, and like basically saying like my life is meaningless until a few weeks from then when I'm actually recording a stream or actually doing something cool for Prada. But instead being in the day and being like, hey, you know, today there's nothing happening, but that doesn't mean, you know, I can choose happiness and choose to exist in the moment and have a laugh with my friends over text message or whatever it might be. So it's mostly that. I know that meditation would go a long way for me, but I'd be lying if I said I had actually made a very real and positive effort at it. I always get too bouncy and distracted, but maybe one day I'll actually make the effort.
Yeah, I'm sure I've got ADD, ADHD, so yeah, me trying to fucking focus and meditate. I can hear somehow I can like hear birds from fucking 700 miles away and I'm like, oh, that's it. Oh no, shut the fuck up and go back to what the fuck I was trying to do. Like, it's just mad. So yeah, no, I'm completely with you on that.
Yeah, it's FOMO. It's very real FOMO as far as fear of missing out. I laughed at it when I first heard that term, but now I'm like, oh, I have it. Like, that's me.
Yeah, that's the thing. But at least there is a lot of things for you to get excited about and work your mind towards. And we've got to talk about the Devil Wears Prada's brand new EP, Z2. Of course, this is really a follow-up to a fan favorite and cult release of the Zombie EP you put out 11 years ago. Talk us through the process of following up on such a iconic release for the band now all these years later. Was it a conscious decision that you wanted to go down this route? Is it being something that in the works for a while? What's the backstory and everything behind it?
Yeah, there really wasn't a lot of... Actually, I don't think there was any talks of it, primarily in that we've been so excited on our last record, The Act, which came out towards the end of 2019, and then, you know, early... we toured that. We were overseas with Straight From The Path, having a great time finishing off 2019. 2020 was off to an amazing start here in the States touring, and then we got shut down. So really all of our effort, our just mindset, brain space, whatever you want to call it, was completely surrounding the act. And then when we got shut down, it was like, what can we really do? Like the streams became a more real thing, and we put those together, and we've done now 3 stream sets as far as, you know, trying to highlight the act and some of the songs that we're so proud of off that release. But when, with the initial shutdown, it was Kyle's idea to do a 7-inch around the Zombie EP and basically just write 2 more new songs and release it as, you know, an A couple singles and press it. That was a I don't know how early it was. You know, we got sent off a tour in March. I don't know if that was April or May, but we, like everyone, thought we'd be back on the road in midsummer. That was obviously not the situation. Here we are now, and the way I phrase it is just like the pandemic, the EP idea lengthened. And we were like, why do 2 songs? Let's do a proper EP again. Celebrating the original as far as being 10 years out, now 11 years out. Celebrating the original, but also having a very concerted effort at sort of recognizing and paying homage to the original, but also commemorating where we're at now and the fact that we're so proud and excited to be who we are now as far as what the band lineup is and who's playing in the band between Giuseppe and Mason joining us more recently. And Z2 does all of that very, very head on, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But especially being 15 years into the band now and having so many records released, it does seem that that original Zombie EP is something that your fans always had this kind of cult favoritism towards and really cemented a different side to the Devil's Whip Prada. So the fact that now that you get to celebrate it with an extra release and these new songs and a whole new EP, do you feel like there's a weird pressure in some sense because they've already created this kind of love fest between the original, that a follow-up, it gives that a little bit more pressure, or is it more fun?
No, you're exactly right. I mean, I think the biggest hurdle kind of digesting and processing this idea, like it, no part of me when the band was like, hey, let's do more than just 2 songs, was I like, oh no, that's a bad idea. I was like, yeah, I'm in. Like, I got time on my hands.
I'm too busy, guys. I'm too busy.
Let me check my schedule.
Oh, no.
but the first thing in my mind was the people nagging that would say, oh, the original's better. The original's better. And, like, you know, it's funny is, like, I try not to read comments regardless, but I know that with the stream, I've seen a lot of people complimenting me as far as, like, your voice is back, your voice is back. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking? Like, where did my voice ever go? Like, that's the worst backhanded compliment ever. Or like, Prada's heavy again. And it's like, listen to the thread from the act and tell me that Prada is soft or something. So yeah, I knew that there would be people saying the original's better, because for the last 10 years, you know, you hear like, I wish so-and-so was still in the band, and it was like, so-and-so chose to leave the band, you know, and like, here's like better songwriting with this person in the band. But yeah, you know, backhanded compliments or not, I knew that people would want to make the comparison, but I've gone through the whole process just under the same pretense, based on our A&R at Solid State at the label, Adam. He said, like, dude, it's just like Mad Max. He's like, the new Mad Max was so cool, but it was nothing like the original, and it didn't take anything away from the original coolness of Mad Max. So I have visualized and perceived Z2 and Zombie 1 in the exact same sort of lens. And luckily enough, I really haven't, again, I don't read comments, but I haven't really had any issues seeing people being like, the original's better, like the original is heavier. And it's like, it's not a competition. You know, like, you don't, these aren't 2 teams facing off here. Yeah. So yeah, I think to your question, it is fun, and I knew it would be fun, but there was definitely some level of recognition about what the reception would be, and needing the, you know, to some extent, you know, as an artist, you always want to try to defend, but as a human being, you wish to defend yourself being totally chewed apart. But I'm the band, our group chats have just been like off the rails excited with the reception. So we're very jazzed.
Nice.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, that's really good to hear. And yeah, you're always going to get a couple of bell ends who are like, play the old stuff. I only care about old stuff. And it's like, bro, that was 15 years ago. Like, yeah, chill out. Like, it's just, don't get me wrong. When that EP probably came out the first time, that was probably the happiest time of your life. And I understand why you busting to get it back. But here's the new EP and it's fucking super heavy. But yeah, it's people in bands are always going to have those people who are like, I prefer the early stuff. And then, even my old band used to get it. And then you'd listen back and you'd listen back to the old stuff and go, that's some of the worst recorded material I've ever heard in my life. What do you mean it's the best stuff? If that's the best stuff now, and we've been going for 10 years, why are you... You could see why my band fell apart.
But I always find it interesting as well, because you still think, like, you know, doing something like this is a bit more of a fun concept that you think would honing a bit more to their feelings. It's not like you're taking away the original EP and shutting it
down. Delete, the first one's gone.
Yeah. I mean, I at the same time though, like, I guess the good thing about all of this is that we don't look back on Zombie One and be like, oh, that's an embarrassing moment. You know, like we haven't played anything from Dear Love, our very first LP, in quite a long while. So it's like, if this was, I think it would be a much harder conversation to have as far as like, if we went back and re-recorded Dear Love or re-recorded Plagues or even toured those records. Like, I know the band could have, you know, made some money doing 10-year anniversaries on those releases, but there's a very real effort not to do it because the songwriting was so you know, like, looking back at it as far as like, cringy, and I wish, you know, there's no point in wasting your time regretting it or being worried about early stuff. But it is nice that, you know, Z2 celebrates Zombie One, and we can look back at Zombie One and be like, yeah, like, I don't think those songs were recorded poorly. I don't think the songwriting was super...
When I mentioned that earlier, I was talking about solely about my band.
But I mean, like, for me, like, it's nice being able to do that, because there is so much material in our back catalog that we would not choose to celebrate. Zombie One, as much as I know I could have done a better job now as a more experienced songwriter and vocalist and lyricist, I think it stands up, but I don't like patting myself on the back, and I don't mean to come across as arrogant by any means, but Zombie One is something we can stand behind for sure.
Yeah. Well, looking back at the old material and stuff as well, and especially with it being 11 years since Zombie came out, how do you think that stands compared to the rest of Prada's back catalogue? Because as I mentioned, it does seem to have that kind of cult following with a lot of your fans.
Looking back at Z1, it's totally cool. You know, like, towards the end of last year when we did our first two, online stream sets, we played through Zombie One and then played through the Space EP, and both are like, no part of it is like, oh, this is an embarrassing moment. You know, like, we did a few years ago, we did a 10-year anniversary tour for With Roots Above and Branches Below, which is our third LP. And while most of it is totally digestible and, you know, we can play the songs and feel honest, there are certain moments where we would look at each other on stage every night and be like, this sucks. Like, you know, like, like, what you're playing right now, it sucks. It's nice that honestly Zombie isn't like that so much. I think that, like, when I look back to to more succinctly answer your question, like, when I look back at some of the Zombie parts that might be a little cringy, it's more so just like, I wish it could have had a little more moment to breathe. like, you know, we did the first two records and we did with Roots Above, which was like really Prada coming into Prada, and then Zombie, and then Dead Throne. And when we did Dead Throne, it was our first time working with Adam D, producing the record, recording the record. And for me, it was the first time I ever really felt produced as a vocalist and as a musician. And I learned so much from Adam that I still take in every songwriting or recording session solely from Adam. And one of those big ones is like, dude, you got to let it breathe, let it breathe. And when we were working on Dead Throne, it was really nice because I came to realize, like, oh, not only is the song better when it can have a break from a vocal, but I can feel better because when like, as a vocal, like, I'm not just dead up there playing the song. So I think that's the only really bit of regret as far as Zombie One is looking at it and be like, yo, I could have let it breathe a little more there. I could have, you know, the phrasing could have been much better. But for the, again, for the most part, I look back at Zombie One and with a level of admiration and pride, I think.
Nice. Well, yeah, you talked about Adam D producing you there for the first time. How did that come about, and how did it feel having like being produced properly for the first time? Because I know a lot of bands, well, myself included, at first when we had a producer in and he was telling us to change bits of our songs, I know originally I was like, "Who the what's he think he's doing? It's my band. You can't just come in and tell him no." But then after it, I was like, oh, no, I'm all for this. This makes complete sense.
Yeah, no, it's like to anyone, it's so important to have an admiration for your producer or your engineer, I think, going into a session. Because if you're working with someone that's like, the last thing that's ever going to work well as a musician is if like someone is critiquing your songs and you feel like personally offended by it. And like, as a defense mechanism, you go like, well, how would you know? Like, you've never recorded a good song. Like, you've never written a good song. So I think, you know, what's awesome about Adam is like, I don't bring that to the table, you know, like as someone, you know, I'm 23 at the time, 22. I forget how old I was when we started working with Adam, but it was like, you know, like, this is a god in metalcore, you know, this guy wrote the book. In more than one way. So yeah, like when Adam started picking apart, I think some of the other members might have been a little more singed or kind of offended, for lack of better words. I can't think of the word I'm trying to use here, but for me it was a lot like, he knows what he's talking about. Even like if there were moments where I was like, oh, I kind of prefer the way I would do it, I would kind of look at other songs that he had changed and say like, no, like, you know, back out, be objective, be a little less hands-on, be as objective as he has in terms of like the good of the song. And that helps really put me into place. So like we've worked with people, I won't mention, that when they would critique the songs, you'd be like, what do you know? Like John, who produces the band and plays keyboards in the band and writes songs with us and a band member, like John, he makes changes all the time. And everything we do these days runs through the filter of John. And what, like, based on that, like, you can always look at it and be like, okay, like, he does know best because of X, Y, and Z. Like, 1, 2, 3. Here's how, like, he can physically list out why his idea is better for the song in like almost like a scientific or mathematic manner. So yeah, to long tangent here, but Adam was someone that was very easily able to be like, oh, listen to this guy, don't try to stick, like, don't be a
you can't turn to Adam and be like, yeah, what the fuck, like, you've done nothing. And then he just goes and then he just goes, my curse. And you go, all right, yeah, fair enough. One then. All right, you got fucking one. And then he goes, yeah, end of Arctic. And you go, fuck, yeah, you got one.
That's a hook there.
Two. Anyone can do it. Anybody can flip a coin twice and it land on both things. Can you do it again? My Last Serenade. Oh, yeah, no, carry on. No, you're all right. Delete all my vocals so far. You're all right. Fair play to you. And my last Adam D question. trousers or very, very small shorts in the studio? what was his go-to leg wear?
That is a good question. I also just realized I didn't answer you as far as how we met him. And we were just lucky enough to tour. We've toured with Killswitch twice, but the first time we toured, he was like such a great dude. And like, yeah, I'd love to work with you guys. When we would like very lightly mention it, he'd be like, well, yeah. And we're like, he'd be interested, and it worked out great. But yeah, trousers. He wore pants, never the short shorts, no capes. He was quite professional.
Now, do you know what? I was going to follow it up with that. Actually, I said last question, but what about a cape? Bandana, funny wig?
No do-rags, nothing. He would bring his I think the funniest thing about Adam's like wardrobe in any sense was coming to the studio, he would have not like a briefcase, but like his laptop bag with his stuff, and he would carry hot sauce in it because he everything he eats, it has to be spicy. So like I remember like snack times, he would have like a Triscuit cracker, and he would pull his sriracha out of his bag, and he would the Triscuit cracker is perfectly square, and he would like cover every square like millimeter of the cracker in hot sauce and eat it as he's working on it, and like while also like giving you shit about like your bad vocal take or something. Like, nope, we're doing bad. He is very loud. He maintains the loudness here and there, but yeah, the dude is so fucking crazy humble and like genuinely kind, like such a kind person as well, and generous too. So like, I don't have a bad thing to say about him.
Good. Yeah, good. Yeah, no, that is good to hear. And like, it's interesting to see as a whole, the evolution of Prada over the years, especially recently. I mean, you know, putting out Z2, which is such a heavy release in the collection of songs. But back in 2019, with your last record, The Act, I mean, that was the first time you really had kind of commercial radio success with your track Chemical. Is it just interesting now to see for you that there's so many different sides of the band and that you're able to take it in more places than maybe you could have a few years back?
Yeah, you know, my perception has changed. You know, when we wrote Dead Throne, we started dabbling with like what we called jammier songs, specifically like Kansas, which is like an instrumental track, or the song Chicago, which is very like a post-hardcore vibe. And then we very much carry that into our next record, 818. And then from there to like Transit Blues, it started becoming not so much like what we consider jammier songs, but just more rock songs. And from Transit Blues to The Act, our perception of rock songs is something like Chemical, or for me, like a song like Diamond Lost, in which, you know, it feels more like a rock song than anything like a metalcore song per se. But yeah, the biggest thing I really kind of proclaim about is that we like to do both. Like we like one of my favorite songs, if not my favorite song from The Act, is a song called Please Say No. And we've had the pleasure of getting to play that song live a lot. And it's seriously, besides recorded, one of my prouder songs that we've ever concocted, one of my favorite, more enjoyable songs to play live, in that it feels like the expression and the delivery and the performance just feels so real every time. Like there's no way to play that song for me without just a boatload of emotion and level of catharsis to it. And I really love that. I love that, giving that emotion. But at the same time, you know, we've played Z2 songs, and that, you know, we just had the stream and whatnot. But at the same time, I know that like when we go to play Nightfall live on tour, it's going to be a very different reach to me. Like it tugs at my soul, for lack of better words, in a very different way than like playing a song like Please Say No. So it's really just like the same in like, you know, of exercising a different part of your vocal range. I think it's exercising a different part of sort of like your musicianship or your creativity and how you wish to perform a song. So in the same way as playing the songs live is a different experience as far as like a sadness versus like an anger or aggression, I think it's the same, just recording songs as far as getting to do Chemical and enjoying and loving and getting to play that song, but then going to the studio and saying like, all right, you're just going to bark, can you make it till dawn a dozen times over nightfall and whatnot. Like, both are fun. And I get to do both. And the other guys, I'm sure, can say the same things in terms of guitar tones and getting to exercise and perform things in different ways.
Well, you mentioned you've done three streams so far. How has that been? Because I haven't had the bravery to even try and get my band to an attempt to stream. How did you find it? Was it just exactly the same for you, or was it a bit different, a bit weird? Was there anything you had to work on, or
the third one that we did this past weekend was different because it was the first time we were playing Z2. So there's less leniency there as far as playing the songs really tight. Usually after you play a song, you know, like Danger Wild Man, for instance, that I've played, God, probably, oh, I haven't even thought about it, probably 600 times in my life or something, you know, at least, you know, you're not going to play it album tight every time, you know, you're not a robot. And our band isn't one of those bands that tries to make songs like clockwork live. They need to be played well and played tight, but there is leniency for expression, I would say. So, you know, the third stream was different in that Z2 songs had to be more concise than, you know, playing with Roots Above front to back we did late last year. But for me, like the thing that I've kind of expressed it as, like, I love watching stream sets online pre-pandemic, like KEXP out of Seattle or Audio Tree in Chicago, or both video series and platforms that I've enjoyed long before the pandemic. And we had the pleasure of doing an Audio Tree live, and it was very nerve-wracking. It was the first like really live thing we had done in terms of like an in-studio unedited session that's going streaming straight to the internet. But with that, I love it. I love watching other bands do it, and our band isn't like a bullshit backtrack band, you know, that's playing a quarter of the live guitars and the rest is on, you know, a Logic rig or a computer side stage. So we've recorded, like, the act is a lot recorded live anyway, and it's a full length record. So it's just another tool sort of like in the toolbox for us, as far as like, if we have it, use it. So we've done sets like the Audio Tree set was huge for us. And I just kind of use that part of my brain to bring into the studio, B24 in Kansas, where we've done these stream sets now. So I'm very comfortable with it. We're very diligent in practice and getting it tight and critiquing ourselves. And, you know, John, who really runs the show and keeps things tight, has no problem saying, like, Giuseppe, our drummer, saying like, yo, harder here, or you're falling, every time you're falling a little bit behind here, and it makes the song feel this way. Like, Giuseppe isn't going to hear that and say, fuck you, I quit, you know. Like, so we've got a level of professionalism there, as well as good camaraderie and good chemistry, as far as, you know, not feeling slighted. Slighted, that was the word I couldn't think of. I kept saying singed, but I meant to say slighted. But yeah, it feels good. It feels natural for us to do the stream thing.
Nice. And earlier in the conversation, obviously, we kind of mentioned a lot of different projects you have on the side and how you're a very busy man away from the band. And there's a couple of those elements I would like to get into, especially your books and you being an author, because you've published quite a few different kind of styles over the years, whether it be kind of short stories based off a song or collections of poetry and stuff like that. I was just wondering, really, if you can talk through your journey and experiences as an author, kind of writing these books. How do the ideas come to fruition and just really getting them published? What is that like?
I always considered myself more of a lyricist than a musician off the bat with the band. So it's always been of great interest to me, reading and writing, and it informs really everything I do. And with that, I don't know. I kind of just, at one point, I guess it was the late 2000s, like maybe 2008, 2009, I started like more ritualistically or more like scheduled journaling, like writing, trying to write something every day. The same as a lot of songwriters will do, like a song a day type projects. And that basically just kind of kept rolling almost like a snowball until it accumulated enough to become something. And I ended up writing about Dead Throne, and I basically did like a lyrical breakdown song by song, line by line, and self-published that myself in like 2012 or 2013. It's a very proud moment for me. I get very excited when thoughts become physical, same as like I'm very much like a physical music consumer, and that I love vinyl LPs and I love artwork and everything that comes outside of, you know, just hearing a song. So with that, I get very excited when, you know, my thoughts and scrambled sort of prose and poetry goes from a notebook to then becoming printed on a page by the hundreds or the thousands. So I've self-published a number of different things now over the course of the last number of years. I re-released my first book as like a kind of last rendition in terms of chronicling Dead Throne as a record. I had a lot of people that have wanted it, and I do very limited runs for these things. And I did my last run of that, but otherwise, yeah, it's just scrambled sort of poetry and whatnot. I've written two unfinished novels that I've yet to publish, and I've been horrible about procrastinating. However, one day I hope to actually put the final touches on those. But I kind of hit my swings in terms of being more diligent, and then other times I get more busy with projects that are much more physical, like even something like woodworking I really enjoy, or fixing up my house. I like these tasks, and sometimes it's like I can't force myself to sit down and write something, and then other times, you know, the ideas really flow. So it's just always having something to do, something to keep busy with.
Yeah, how hard is it to self-publish a book, Ken? Not that I've ever got the fucking... That's the last thing anybody wants from me is a fucking book. But I'm just wondering, for people listening who are like, that's super interesting. Yeah, how does that come about? Like,
It's almost...
Is it like CD manufacturing? Like, you've got the book there on your computer, USB, do you just then send that to...
It actually,
Gary,
it
the bookmaker.
It all Gary. I got another one. It's not unlike that, really. You know, it's not so much like bouncing out a Photoshop file or a AI to the screen printer and saying like, "Hey, make this T-shirt in sizes 10 smalls, 15 mediums, 20 larges, etc., etc." I'm very bad with computers, which doesn't help, but basically it's just formulating, it's taking the ideas, you know, I always like printing out my work and editing it on paper with a pen versus like just sitting on a laptop. And I basically just do that a few times over an idea and then, you know, update on the computer, and then you format it as like a PDF and all this. And then I work with a company in New Jersey that's been really just amazing all around, as far as like taking my files and saying, okay, you need to clean this up. Because again, like if you put Photoshop in front of me and say like, hey, make a white border around this picture, I'm going to be like on YouTube for 20 minutes to do the most basic thing in the world. So, but yeah, there are a lot of different options. I've even kind of shopped around looking at other options as far as publishing, but it's really not all that unlike, you know, having an EP and getting it CDs made or cassettes made. Just a different format, different means of media.
No, but I know books are really a big part of your life, and that really at the end of every year, you normally post a recap of things you've been reading on your social media pages and stuff. Is there anything in particular at this current time that you've been checking out that you think maybe people would enjoy or worth them giving a read?
Yeah. I haven't been reading a whole ton. I'm reading a book right now called The Unbearable Lightness of Being by Milan Kundera. I believe born Czech Republic, but moved to France early on, but it's been really good. A contemporary novel, I don't know if it came out this year or last year, but it was a book called We Run the Tides, based on, it's not like a coming of age story, but about a young woman in the Bay Area some years ago. But that was one of the more recently published books that I've really loved. I believe the author's name is Venda La Vida. But We Run the Tides is a really good one, I think, that I've texted friends about, no matter what sort of literature you're into. That's one I can definitely propose.
Yeah, and as both a consumer and an artist, like, what is the different parallels you get from kind of books and poetry compared to music and writing lyrics? Is there kind of a big difference for you, both creatively and just kind of consuming both of those? Like, how different is it for you?
I mentioned earlier that literature is always, writing and reading and writing has informed everything I do. I think that consuming informs everything. There are people even close in my life that are very, like, they make a lot of music but don't listen to a lot, which is fine. You know, there are a lot of great writers that don't really read a whole lot, I suppose. But for me, consuming is always more important than producing. Okay. And just that I think it adds needed perspective and knowledge that's so important. So it is different, but when I was a kid, I loved Edgar Allan Poe. Like, scary stories really spoke to me. And more coming to age, or when I was more in my teen years, I started reading a lot of Stephen King, and I still enjoy Stephen King here and there, but I remember, like, an introduction to one of his books he had spoken of how, for, like, I'm going to mess up what his quote was, but it was along the lines, or it was basically like, for every 10 hours that you create something, you need to spend 100 hours consuming something. Or, you know, like, if you write for 1 hour a day, you know, you should be reading 6 to 10 hours a day or something like that. And it's not to say that that's automatic or that's necessary for everyone, but it's sort of a model that which guides my creative process, for sure.
Yeah, no, that's definitely really interesting to hear. And along the lines of all those other projects as well, we know you're a massive fan of hockey, and you've even got your own clothing line with the Hawkshaw Hockey Club. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so I am a huge hockey nut. I love sports generally. I'm a real jock. I basically, during the pandemic, saw something that I wanted to create, something that kind of fit in an area that I didn't see necessitated by any other part of hockey or hockey culture, and trying to promote the game by means of inclusivity and basically better design than what I see. I see, like, hockey is very real culturally, and there's such a huge community to the game, and a lot of it is very funny. But what I was kind of seeing is that it was either, like, super violent and brutal or super, like, jokey and immature. And I wanted to create something that, like, that kind of speaks to alternative culture, but also just really exceptional quality. So my good friend Anthony and I were the first, and our good friend Luke is also a part of our company at Hacksaw Hockey, and basically creating apparel that that speaks to the player, utmost quality. And it's been really fun so far. It's another means of me to be involved with the game that I really, really love. If I could be on the ice playing for every waking hour, I would be. I'm an old man, so that wouldn't even if that was an option, my body wouldn't be able to handle it physically. But
are you a good skater then?
I'm okay. I don't want to toot my own horn or pump my own tires too much, but I'm a good hockey player. I'm not the best by any stretch, but I love it. It's one of my favorite things about any day, whether it's watching a game or even more so actually getting to play myself. So that's more, it's almost like creativity and how it exercises your brain. And it's been a huge part of my life in more recent years. I played as a kid. I kind of fell out of it for a long time. I've always been a huge fan, but now that I actually play very regularly, it's very much a part of my personality and my routine.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a sport I've really admired for years, especially because I've always think of the fact that, like, not only have you got to be talented and gifted, you know, as in the field of the game, but you've got to learn how to ice skate at the same time. I mean, wow, like that, talk about two talents into one.
I think to ice skating, it's just like anything, it's about positioning. But in terms of just like, it's almost like if you were in a field or something and you had like a cone in the middle of the field and you had to run backwards, sideways, you know, forward, side to side, like anyone, it's doing that, but it's a little trickier when you're not running, but navigating position, not like, not just the lines as far as offsides, I see, you know, making smart plays and being defensively minded as well, but also there's another team that's trying to ruin your day.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
But yeah, I do find that sports would be a lot less fun if you didn't have opposition.
Yeah.
Oh, I was the hockey today. Oh, won again. Oh yeah, was it 100-0? Oh no, we play nobody. We don't play anybody anymore.
Oh wow. But with all that, Mike, just a couple of things I wanted to ask you before we let you go. I have noticed that you have been teasing a little bit online that over this last year, you've been very loosely writing material for what you're thinking of calling a solo project, possibly maybe rumblings or something in 2022. What can you tell us about that at the moment? Is it just small ideas for a different kind of project?
Yeah, it's mostly just, I wouldn't say it's like creating expectation, but it's just really a different exercise than anything in terms of songwriting with Prada. It's like writing a short poem that no one likes versus writing a novel that you want to be on, you know, a bestsellers list. It's just exercising a very different part of my creative spirit and I don't want to say intelligence, but exercising a different part of my brain. So it's more to the music I regularly consume. It's falling in love with like Scott Walker and my always never ending love of Nick Cave and even earlier stuff like early Swan stuff, even more recent Swan stuff. Just different music that I really love and that a different reason to go into a studio and spend time with different friends that are working on music with me. So it's really fun. I haven't been in the studio since early this year, unfortunately, but, things have been very, very hectic in Prada world and in my personal life generally. So I haven't been able to get to it too much, but, yeah, we'll see how the rest of this summer looks. Mason, who plays bass in the Devil Wears Prada, has been a part of this project, and he just moved. He was in Salt Lake City, and now he's in Kansas City, which is about much, much closer to me here in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We work and record in Chicago, just south of me. So the fact that he's a little bit closer is really cool. But my friend Andy, who...
Yeah, how close is close? Bear in mind, you know we're in the UK, and UK crowds will complain about having to drive for 30 minutes to come and see you. So how far away is your nearest band member to you?
That's true. That's very true. You know, in Prada, it would have to be Kansas City, which is like an 8 or 9 hour drive, I think. 8 hour drive.
Jesus Christ. I've got band rehearsal after this, right? Genuinely now, after this, as soon as we finish, I've got to jump in my car and I've got to drive 45 minutes to Cardiff, right, to rehearse with other three members of my band. And I'm angry inside at having to do that, right? 8 fucking hours. You may as well live in a different country. That's nuts.
Yeah.
That's like somebody you're living in, I don't know, the bottom of France.
You got a ferry over.
Yeah.
No,
that's mad, isn't it?
We still maintain that, like, in Prada world, we still maintain a very in-person experience when it comes to songwriting, but it's a little different. You know, we hash out a lot of demos online between just sending stuff back and forth. And again, I'm very, very bad with computers, so it's all to the detriment of John as we work out songs that he gets the shittiest quality demo of me saying, like, okay, here's the lyric, here's me talking over the song. And I send it to him, but he's so talented. He totally gets what what I can do when I have, when he's actually properly recording it versus me handling it. And like, yeah, it's like a 4 out of 10, some of the things I send him as far as a demo, but he's like, yeah, I get what this is going to be. So yeah,
just send it in whispered voice notes. Right.
Yeah.
This bit's the heavy bit.
It's pretty much that early on. But we're also very well prepared when we go to the studio as far as having good demos that we can sit, you know, and pick apart and say, okay, pull the back half of that chorus out. And, you know, these guys are so good that they can just, with Pro Tools or Logic, to just say, okay, now it's out. Let's listen to the song this way. And like, okay, put it back in, but pull the vocal out and like click, click, tap, tap. And it's that way. So those guys deserve all the credit for that. And that's a part of songwriting rather than, you know, the flight is quick. It's like an hour and a half flight. I'm not driving 8 hours.
Yeah, that's much better, yeah.
still, I wouldn't do that. Mad, isn't it? It's so mad, right, when you think about it. Like, it's people in America who are like you guys now. You're in a massive band. The closest one's 8 hours apart. I'm not in a massive band, and I cannot be asked to travel for 45 minutes. Like, it's just mental. Did you record Z2, like, individually, or did you manage to get together too?
No, we for the most part got together, but I wasn't around for guitar, bass, or drum tracking because we did this quite a while ago, earlier in the pandemic, where vaccines were still a distant aspiration.
A dream.
Yeah. So it was mostly just testing and keeping our bubbles tight as far as, like, three of the band members are all in Kansas City now. And a lot of our very close friends are in Kansas City. So as much as you want to have so-and-so and like a few of our merch guys present, you know, coming by and having beers or coffee or lunch when we're tracking, like, it was basically like, sorry, no, we got to keep, like, you know, there's the engineer, there's two assistants, and then the band. So I actually never saw Giuseppe, our drummer, or Mason, our bass player, during tracking. They came in, they got the rhythms down, and then Jeremy and I came in and got the vocals in, and John and Kyle just navigating all of that. So we did all record in person, but it wasn't as much of a recording in person like the act was, where we had like an Airbnb and we're all together in the studio every day.
And with all that, Mike, obviously it's going to be extremely busy for you as always going forward. Z2 is coming out now. You've got possible solo material for us to look forward to sometime in the future, and those novels you mentioned. But is there anything else we should be keeping our eyes and ears peeled for? Anything else you'd like to plug or mention at all?
As much as I always get so excited for, you know, little things and like Hacksaw Hockey, or, you know, writing solo material or releasing books of poetry, I think if hopefully the band is touring again sooner and later, it's just going to be The Devil Wears Prada 1,000% in my life. So I look forward to Z2 dropping here soon. I hope it means we can get overseas again. Getting to be overseas is genuinely probably top two favorite part of playing in The Devil Wears Prada, is getting to see Europe and getting to travel. So we'll see how that
looks. Number one, then? Wait, you can't just give us number two and then not tell us what number one is.
I
hope number one something. I hope number one something mad, like, oh, number one's crack cocaine. Oh, well, nobody's expecting that.
Yeah. I get to do so many drugs playing in the band.
Yeah.
No, I don't. I make that joke and now it's going to backfire at me.
No, it's not. People know.
People know.
We keep telling. We keep telling people on here that backstage is just Wi-Fi codes. There's no strippers. There's no drugs.
Yeah,
it's just...
Yeah, people know by now, yeah.
It really is. Especially in a boring band such as ours where everyone's in relationships.
It's all bands, though, isn't it? It's literally all... Yeah. Like, literally... Since Motley Crue, like, I think about all the time I spent backstage places, right? I reckon I saw a stripper once, and it was my birthday that they got a stripper for. I never, like, I was lucky enough to tour with loads of massive bands, and never once was there a stripper or cocaine or any of that stuff going on. So, yeah, sorry to ruin it. For anybody listening now, and I've just shattered their entire universe, I'm so sorry about that. If it helps, pretend it does. Pretend it does happen.
Yeah,
it's mad, isn't it? Like, it never happens, but...
Yeah, nothing like that. I'd say that my top two are just getting to travel the world and just being in studios and recording.
Nice.
Well, it can be the most like degrading thing in the world. And, you know, when you've got three songs left in 3 days and your voice is feeling like a 6 out of 10, maybe, it's,
that good.
Yeah,
I wish mine was a 6 out of 10.
That's not the best time in a studio, but getting to be in studios is still, and just like playback moments and whatnot is still, I'd say, up there. Mm. I'm probably forgetting something huge, but getting to travel and getting to be in studios are two of my favorite pros.
Nice. Well,
of the job.
Yeah, before we finish, we like asking people in bands about, is there a moment that you remember where you met somebody or one of your heroes or somebody you've been inspired by? And just tell us about that moment. You're bound to have met some of your heroes.
You know, one good one actually wasn't too long ago, maybe 2 years ago or 3 years ago, but the tour was... Shoot, I hope I'm not forgetting anyone. But it was Every Time I Die, Mastodon, and Coheed here in the States.
Wow. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, and now I'm forgetting. I'm pretty sure it was Mastodon playing. But Mastodon was playing one of their records front to back, and I think it was Crack the Sky. Love that record. But a good buddy is a guitar tech for Coheed. Every Time I Die are good friends of ours. And a bunch of us were in town in Chicago for the show, and they were having like a barbecue afterwards. The drummer of Mastodon, I think his name was Troy, was throwing it, and he was just barbecuing for everyone. And I ended up hanging out with like Brent from Mastodon, and one of the fucking greatest guitar players, I think, in our world, hands down. And I remember him just being like, why is your fucking band called that? And I'm like, I don't know, dude. And I'm like, I'm hammered.
Why is your band called that? Mastodon.
Like, oh yeah, you got a fucking sick band name and we're called the Devil Wears Prada. So what? No, definitely like, I love Mastodon. Getting to be around those guys, some of the Coheed guys, is really cool via my buddy Kevin, who's been guitar teching for that band for a long time. So that was one of the more recent experiences as far as like another upside to the gig, was getting to hang out at the after party. And again, yeah, just like talking to some of those guys, and they're all like big men, and the Devil Wears Prada were all like these short little, like our band, we joke about it, we've gotten shorter and shorter over the years in our current lineup. But that was a few years ago. That was a really fun night.
Nice. Well, yeah, another thing you could say is that you've purposefully made the band, the new band members, be smaller, so it costs, so you have more money for luggage spaces to travel over here then, because they fucking love saying you can't take a guitar on a flight.
Yeah, I mean, no one wishes you were bigger when you're in a bus and you're going through bunk alley and you've got to go butt to butt to squeeze by in the bunks. Like,
yep.
Smaller is better.
Yeah, you don't want to. Yeah, and a big tall fella whose feet have to stick out the bottom of the bunk.
Yeah.
And you're the bunk further down, so when you stick your head out in the morning, it's just a big old pair of gammony feet.
Yeah.
Oh, no, thank you. Yeah.
Wow.
Do you know what? I'm gonna kick the rest of my members out of my band now and just hire smaller people in.
Not a bad idea.
Going forward, I think. But Yeah. Well, well, thank you so, so much for doing this.
Yes. Didn't think we'd end on gammony feet, but I have enjoyed this conversation.
Funnily enough, I did. I've written it down because I knew we would. Gammony feet bingo. Cross that off. Gammony feet. Yes! Did it, Morg.
But thank you so much, Mike. It's been a great conversation. Yeah. Best of luck with the new release and all these amazing projects. And hopefully we'll be able to speak to you in person and sometime soon.
No, I appreciate it, guys. I had a blast here. Thanks for having me. And yeah, I hope to be over there soon. And yeah, have a lovely evening, fellas.
Yes.
Thank you very much to Mike for coming on and having a really, really lovely, lovely chat with him. I'll be honest, I wasn't sure how it was going to go. Not because there's anything going on behind the scenes or anything. I just wasn't sure. I didn't know because I'd never really spoken to him before. But yeah, it was a lovely, lovely chat, and he seems like a top human. And I hope that's true and it stays that way forever.
Yes, you do seem to get a little bit more nervous when one of us hasn't had an interaction with the guest before. But it's just nice, the nature of the podcast has become that, Sean. We can talk to strangers and make new friends with them.
Yeah, well, yeah, the worry is that sometimes I wonder if the guest remembers the blackout. And ultimately, if they remember me and if they are going to come in with instant hatred, which is what I imagine all the time. But luckily, and this is across the board, most people have forgotten about the blackout. So, and the fact that my hair isn't bright blonde anymore, that's true. Think that also helps as well, because otherwise people go, are you that tit from that band? So, yeah, it was fucking lovely to talk to Mike. Yeah. Congratulations to them. Z2 is... crushing. It's very, very heavy. Very heavy. Oof.
Yes, if you like your metal very, very heavy, please go and check that
who
out.
Who doesn't? Right, who's going, do you know what?
Well,
nah.
No, well,
I like my metal light. Who's the lightest metal band?
Well,
go on, Morg.
Right, it is a controversial one, but it's baby metal light metal, because even though there's hard breakdown bits, then there's very light choruses. There's poppy choruses. So is that light metal?
I almost don't even count them as a rock band anymore. because it's just, yeah, it's just Japanese pop singing. The music could be anything for them, for baby metal. Mm. It could be fucking ska, it could be fucking techno, it could be happy hardcore, it could be anything. But it just so happens whoever was writing those songs for them just so happened to be a metalhead. I don't think the girls in baby metal know anything. I, do you know what? I'm putting it out there right now.
Oh, here we are. Here we go.
None of the girls in baby metal know anything about metal. And that's not sexism. That's just because I think they've been put together as a manufactured act. If they turn out to be a band, right, that have been a band for 200 years together and they play pubs and there's photos of them, turns out that of them playing tiny little gigs when it was just four girls and a fucking load of long-haired metalers. Fair enough, but I don't think a single person's going to find a fucking gig the baby metal did before they were in an arena or on a massive stage.
Fair, I'm not disagreeing with you, but going back to my point, if you like your metal heavy, go and check out Z2, Z2, you want to call it. And as well, I would recommend going listening to the Devil Wears Prada's 2019 album, The Act. I think that is absolutely wonderful, opened up a lot of new doors for the band and crosses genres a lot as well. So that's my recommendation of the podcast.
Yes, and I'd just like to clear up, those were the thoughts of Sean Smith of Sappening Podcast with Sean Smith, not the Devil Wears Prada, right? I don't want the Devil Wears Prada end up getting a fight with baby metal because of me. Let baby metal fight me if they've got to fight anyone.
Right, so Sean is officially inviting baby metal onto the podcast to have a fight off, I guess. A war of words, that's more appropriate.
I'm not opposed to a fist fight, mind. I'm not opposed to a fist fight. I'm I'm all about equality. Jesus Christ.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
Let's move on. Yes, let's move on. I think we've just been cancelled.
But just quickly to mention as well, after updating everything going on with Prada, they have just released a new Twitch channel. So go and check that out. And if you wanted more information on any of Mike's books, hockey, memorabilia, or anything like that, head over to his social media. And the clothing company is called Hacksaw Hockey Club, which has some very, very nice stuff. So I recommend to go and check that out as well. And while you're on the internet having a look at some things, doing some research, having a little gander, why not head over to vote.heavymusicawards.com and please get your votes in while you can, for somehow we have been nominated in the best podcast category at this year's awards.
Yes, we are now award nominated podcast. Mm. It's happening podcast from now on. That's awesome. And I'm gonna change my fucking LinkedIn after this now. I just realized I make myself look better on LinkedIn. Oh, have you got a LinkedIn?
Do you know what? I really need to get on that. I started making an account. I was probably 15.
Do you?
I don't know.
Do you need to get on it?
Because
I don't think you do. I've been on it for years, right? I have never been offered a single fucking job from it, right? Nobody's even fucking contacted. It's basically like MySpace 9, right? Where loads of people you know just add you and connect you and then go, yeah, you can do that. You can do that.
What do you post on it, though? Like, do people post, like, regular updates? You post, like, tweets and fucking photos
It's all people bragging about their jobs. Like, oh, this week I did this. And I'm like, oh, cool. Nice, brah. Yeah, cool. But, yeah, it's just celebrate Morgan Richards being with fatcocks.com for 4 years or whatever, you know, like that's what it'll say.
Oh,
like,
right.
It'll come up like, why not? You know, and I know you've been with fatcocks.com way longer than that, but I couldn't think of a time.
Well, I'm an OG. I'm an OG in the in that community.
In the fatcock game. Where did I come up with fat cock? I wonder if fat... I'm going to have a look. Is fatcock.com... Let me... Right, here we go. Fatcock.com. I hope my... Right, let's have a look. Oh, it's a website, mate. Rate my cock, it is. Oh, no. Oh, turn on your webcam. No, I don't want Guys, don't go to fatcock.com. I was... I made a grave error there. But Morgan was the first picture I saw, so that was strange.
Yeah, the poster boy, apparently. But don't go to that website. Head to vote.heavymusicawards.com.
Oh, yeah.
And please cast your votes. Voting closes on July the 14th. That's this Wednesday at 5 p.m. UK time. Please, please, please vote for us. If we win, it'll be fucking mad. It's just nice to be nominated as a finalist in these awards and have some recollection of all the hard work we've been doing over the last 2.5 years of this bloody podcast, week in and week out.
Use the wrong word, Dan. You said recollection. What's the word you're looking for?
Recognition.
Recognition.
That's
there
it.
You go.
Professional
we
talkers.
We fucking got there. We're getting better at this. We are getting better. It's only taken us 137 weeks, mate. Yeah. But you know what? I reckon one day we're going to do a show, right, where neither of us cocks up a word.
I doubt it.
No, I'm only joking. Anyway, check out fatcocks.com. No, don't check out. Is there any more before I keep making up websites that end up being actual websites?
Right, if we're mentioning websites, head over to twitter.com/sappeningpod, instagram.com/sappeningpod, give us a follow and like and all those, whatever you do on those. Head over to patreon.com/sappening as well. That's the most important one, to join our wonderful community. There's loads of extra bonus content, interviews, podcasts, playlists, videos, good laughs, and you get to meet your new best friends and just connect with people. Everyone's trying to sort a kind of meetups and what gigs they'll be going to when the world hopefully gets back to normal safely. Let's not get into that because that's scary as fuck as it is. But we would like you to go and join our wonderful community. Please, patreon.com/sappening.
Yes, we've got to stop begging. Because it annoys people. So, yes. Check out our Patreon. Please rate, subscribe, like this podcast, wherever you get podcasts. Please share it in your Instagram stories. I cannot stress how much you just giving it a simple retweet does for us. It fucking literally means the world. I might get more eyes. And someone who doesn't even know about the podcast or doesn't realise that one of their favourite band members has been on a podcast. And that's bound to have happened because we've literally had bands from fucking all walks of life. So we have definitely interviewed someone you love. And I bet that we've got an episode the way you don't know the person, but the story is fucking fascinating. I bet we have, because I know we have. So yeah, please share, rate, subscribe where possible. We appreciate you all very, very much, and hopefully we will be back next week with another episode.
Yes, we will. But yeah.
Well, you say yes, we will. That's not guaranteed. But carry on.
But just get it out there as much as you can. Even if you go to fatcocks.com or whatever Sean said, just talk to them about it. You never know, might get some more listeners.
Yeah, if you go on your webcam on fatcocks.com, right? Please just keep going. Hey guys. Oh, put that away. Go to check out Sapling Podcast. Oh my god! Yeah, fucking I can't believe it.
But what
yeah,
we should let's go. What we need to what we need to mention before we wrap things up. If you head to the description of this episode, there's loads of names in there we need to thank from our Patreon to help make this thing happen each and every week. And as we normally do, Sean is going to give a massive shout out to the elite members of our community. Those are the ones in the Patreon with the top tiers, and let's see what they say.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Confidence starts with loving who you are. And when your skin feels nourished and glows on the outside, you naturally radiate confidence from the inside. Give your skin a glow up with Osea's clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This ultra-hydrating body care features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. These seaweed-powered heroes use skincare-level ingredients normally reserved for your face for results you can see and confidence you can feel. Osea has been making clean, clinically proven seaweed-infused face and body care products for over 28 years. This luxurious skincare is vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, so you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code GLOW.
Yes, thank you very much to the saviours in this list. Thank you very much, Kylie Wheeler, Mayumi Liwoway, Mikey McDonald's McMuffin Buns, Mitch Perry, Emma Barber, Kelly Young, Dilly Grimwood, Nathan Croshaw, Scooby Drew Styles, Paul Hirschfield, Liam Connolly, Kelly Irwin, Kat Besson, Sammy G, Amardina Barno, Shani Meyer Boxel Anderson, Tony Michael, Captain Hannibal, Amy Campion, Murray Grimwood, Jenny Robinson, Johnny Phillips, Mike Oxmall. Fuck. Nice one, Scott. Scott Jones has got me there by admitting. Anyway, Tom Owen, thank you very much. Caitlin Richards, Caroline Robinson, Kate Stevenson, Danny Eaton, Jenny Munster, Lucy Deards, Emily Senegals, John and Emma, Martina McManus, Becky Handy, Louis Cook, Jason Heredia, which isn't a million miles away from this week's guest's name, Marcy Jacobson, Sharifa Wadali, Carl Pendlebury, Kelly Cannon, Livy Cropper, Kevin Clark, James McNaught, Stuart McNaught, Lydia Henderson, Craig, I probably did something stupid to download, please don't remind me, Harris. Yeah, you didn't change your name. It's been 3 weeks. Chris Howard, Ollie Amesbury, Josh, why did the scarecrow win an award? Because he was outstanding in his field. Chris? Thank you very much. Alice Wood, Adam King of the Goss Parcel, Mark Jones, Amy Chilvers, Reese Vought Sapman at the Every Music Awards Bowring. My man! Yes, Reese, that's a fuck you appearance. I've given you the best middle name I've ever heard. Jacob Turner, Katrina, are ghosts actually saying boobs? Robinson? I don't know. I don't think they exist. And last but no means least, Connor Lewins. Thank you very much to those people. You keep this going and everybody involved with our Patreon does. We love you and appreciate you so much. This has been Sapling Podcast episode 137 with Mike from The Devil Wears Prada. We out this bitch. Sapling!
Sapling!
You're listening to Sapling Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.